on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
I will just do a little introduction and then this will be it. This is part of the process through the year. Those who are not aware, our hearing board legally has to comment both on the expense budgets, which are the day-to-day operations of the city. The city on a fiscal year, beginning July 1st, goes to June 30th. And the capital budget, which is the long-term infrastructure for investment.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
And Hanson, but I think I was carrying anyway. This is actually, we're looking at fiscal year 17. We're currently in fiscal year 16. Fiscal year 17 begins July 1st next year. You can advance yourself in that way. It's a new process. The process has been going on for a while, but the format is new. The board struggled to put our priorities in the format. The format, as many of us who struggled with it know, that it was created more for the agencies to which these priorities are directed than for us as a community board to make it easy for us to put it together. But we did a very good job. I want to thank the people on the task force, maybe whatever we call ourselves, Ernest and Dolores, and Charles was involved for a while, and Christine, and
Yoni.
And Yoni.
Jeff. And Yoni.
Oh, I'm sorry, Yoni.
And Jesse.
And Jesse. But Jesse is the one who struggled the most to format it, put it all together. He was on the right way. I've been informed that there's nobody in this room who has any comments. Anybody else have a question or two? If not, it's closed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have your list of people?
Thank you for a terrific job. Really appreciate the enormous amount of work to get to this new format and to prioritize. You know how hard it is, like between your choosing between your children. I want to do this, or do I want to do that? Very hard. Now I'm going to turn to our first vice chair, Dolores Rubio. Oh, first I need to do adoption of the agenda. So our agenda is, you have in front of us, you have some items which have been crossed, some items which have been tabled. Is there any new item to put on the agenda? No? Could we have a vote for the agenda, to adopt the agenda?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. All in favor? Yes? Okay, very good. So last month, I did the agenda before. And Dolores, our first vice chair, is going to do the public, run the public session.
Okay, I'm going to call up the names of for those who signed up to speak. You'll have 2 minutes to speak. Please identify yourself. And if you have not signed up to speak, there is a sign-up sheet in the back. So we'll start with Caitlin Peterson, Paulette Osborne, and Douglas Leland, and David Nova. So if you can just line up over here. Caitlin?
Hi, my name is Caitlin Peterson. I'm the president of the Manhattan Community Go House. We are a free public planning program in Hudson River Park on 56th Street. Our season outside is ended for the year with 22,000 kayakers on the Hudson River, but we're not done for 2015. We are also running a free program for children ages 6 through 13, starting this Saturday at the Versus Everly Recreation Center on 60th Street. We partnered with New York City Parks. We want to get kids out of the water, so we hope to see your kids, your neighbor's kids, the kids in the community. You can reach out to the Berkshire Everly Recreation Center for more information. Thank you.
That's it. Oh my God.
Because it wasn't 2 minutes. You have a full 2 minutes.
Hi. Hi, I'm Paulette Osborne. I live at 325 West 43rd Street. And this is Megan. She didn't sign up to speak, but she said it's more of a report. There's an app on our phones called Nextdoor. And I think it's really given us a good community sort of a board, or, you know, a
It's something where we could post things. And Megan posted a concern, and it really got a lot of conversation started. And I'm noticing that 43rd between 8th and 9th, and also around the corner, people don't even know that where she lives is an apartment building in between the strip club and the sex shop. And they're having a lot of problems with drug dealers, homeless people that seem to be drug dealers too, and all this is going on right under the noses of the policeman who's standing there saying, yes, I've seen several drug dealers just go down and I can't do anything about it. So I guess I've never been to a community board meeting before. I think I must have been to the smaller meetings, maybe, for the... So I'm not sure if this is a venue for it, to speak about it, but I really, really would like to know why this street has suddenly just become, you know, it's not clean, as clean as it was before.
It's not safe.
It's not safe, yeah. So, and you know, I lived in the neighborhood in 1990, maybe this was 3 years ago. In 1990, I think we all know what that neighborhood is like. So I've lived through a lot of it, and I feel like it's regressing. And I, you know, certainly don't want to see that in our city, in our neighborhood. Is that something that we can address?
What I would suggest is also take a look at our website, nyc.gov/mcb4, and look for the schedule of the precinct council meetings and go to Midtown North's precinct council meeting. JD, it's the third Tuesday of every month. I think it's important to still get that on record there.
Yeah, Megan did that, I guess.
I've been in contact with the head of crime and prevention in the 14th precinct, and John Mudd actually told us to come tonight.
No, keeping both of them is very important for
And then I've read all your posts and responded to them.
Okay. Oh, I forgot that. Yeah.
That's me. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Douglas Leland. Hi. Oh, there you are.
How are you doing?
I'm Douglas Steeland, and I'm also a president, and yes, I read your post, and I read your critique. I hear about pretty much the same things they're saying. It's not exclusively your block, it's also coming down to 10th and 11th and 110th Avenue as well. There have been three major incidences within our neighborhood in the last few months, including someone hit with a hammer or with the back of the head, someone hit with a mobile at night, and their light goes working thanks to Matt Green. He's right on top of the thing about the light. I've been to the precinct meetings, by the way, and the precincts say different things than you do. And I would like to ask that you all get in touch with those people in charge of the precinct and get everybody on the same page for the policy. I was told 911 instead of 311 on the homeless situation by the 10th precinct. I think you're not on. Are you in precinct 10?
No.
Midtown
North.
No, Midtown North, 18th.
Okay. But I just want to say that I know the whole problem is a citywide issue.
But we need to
But this is a great neighborhood we're trying to protect. I've noticed more police lately, and the only way we're going to do it is by staying active and continuing to remind people that the purse strings of New York are 2 blocks away. I've said this before, $5 billion generated by Times Square, Broadway Times Square. You cannot ignore the places where the people who work there and the tourists that come through it are going. That's your time, your 20-year time to do that. So please, this is something, I got an email about Port Authority, that after November 1st, they were going to do a sweep. Well, two nights in a row, they had tables out, like to picnic, with religious groups coming to try to speak. I know it's great that they wanted a minister to them, but I thought we talked about this before Christine, about not making this a place to gather. What you're doing is by doing this, you're asking people to come back to the spot. And the nights they're not ministering, I'm sorry. They are still laying on the sidewalk, and they're still visible on the sidewalk, and they're still there. So, walk the walk, no, don't talk the talk.
Thank you.
David,
can we get your phone number, by the way?
phone number.
Yeah.
I have to comment on this. Is it
appropriate to do that?
Yeah,
this is what you would do. Call you and set up
some things. I signed up on the wrong list, so she just said put that.
And so explain which letter you're talking about. And the other lady as well.
Yes.
Give us a new bar that we want. There's a beautiful letter that you guys put together. It's great. Thank you. This letter covers pretty much a lot of our concerns. There is one thing I'd like to add, though, because they're asking for an acoustic engineer to evaluate how the sound will affect the entire floor above what the bar is, if it happens. I'd also like to add that we also consult a structural engineer, because the way the building is built, the building is built a lot like a thermos. A lot of you remember the thermoses that we used to take to school for lunch in your lunchbox. They had a hollow on the inside. That's the way our building was built. It was kind of really genius, I think, for energy efficiency in the 70s. The thing is, it conducts sound really well as well. So they're going to have to crack that open if they're going to insulate the sound, and that can cause structural problems. So I'd like to add that we could be able to take a look at that. Thank you
all for everything you've done for us so long. Okay. Thank you. Was there anyone else that wanted to speak during
the public session that did not sign up? Yes, right
here. Okay. All right, you're up.
Hi.
If you just identify yourself, and then you have 2 minutes. Thank you so much.
Yes. I'm David Glasser. I live at the SRO Hotel at 184 11th Avenue. And you may have heard of our premises. I've been here many times before to speak about our concerns. Recently, we've been in the news that transient tenants have requested to become permanent tenants, whereupon they've been immediately locked out. And there have been court proceedings, and in each and every case, there was an appellate decision just last Friday, they've been restored to the premises. However, when the first decision came down in August, Jazz Hostels, they elected to close the hotel, allegedly close the hotel, whereupon they stole every single light fixture in the bathrooms, the knobs to turn the fixtures on and off, they stole the light bulbs, and then they stole the furniture out of our lobby for over 3 months, during which time I repeatedly, at least 20 times, raised such matters with Clinton Housing. We have had no furniture in our lobby. It's just a bare wall. I'd like something to be done about this. Thank you.
Any suggestions about where to go with that?
Okay, we had a late sign up.
Hi, I'm Megan Wright. I was up for a comment. I just figured I'd give, for those of you who aren't on the app, a background to what we were talking about. I posted something, I'd say, about 6 weeks ago about an issue that we've been having in front of our apartment with a homeless person in our neighborhood. I'm sure you all know him. He's a homeless guy in a wheelchair with his legs that are bandaged up. He's decided to take residency pretty much every day in front of our apartment. He leaves his medical supplies there. He leaves blood on our doorstep. He does drug deals in front of our apartment. So that's something that we've been really trying to reach out about. I call 311 frequently. I call 911 frequently. We call every other number that they tell us to call. I've been contacted with the 14th precinct about this, and talking to the crime prevention detective, Paul Spano. He said that he's going to have more people close in our area, but it doesn't seem like it's making a difference. He's still there every day, every morning, all day while we're at work. There during the night. He does drug deals all day long in front of our apartment. And it's not safe, among other issues that we have, just with safety all day long in front of our apartment. It's not safe for me to walk our dog in the morning before 8 a.m. where we are. It seems like we're getting a lot of misleading information from whoever we call. The last few weeks, our most effective way to get rid of this guy is just to find an officer on the street who can remove him. When he gets out of his wheelchair, he blocks our front door and he can't get out. He has an air mattress. He just parks and leaves everything there, and we can't do anything about it. So I just figured I'd give you a background about it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Dahlia?
Dahlia.
Dahlia. Sorry, I read it wrong.
Thank you.
Here's Steve about the bar and restaurant that they want to put into our building, this venue, which I don't think it's would suit any purpose for the tenants of our building. 396 tenants throughout the building. There is a state certified early childhood learning center there and a state certified pre-K. And it's on the premises. It's not separated. It's not a separate building. We have two steps to the building. It interconnects with each other by the hallway. The low rise is where our daycare pre-K, certification is. And I don't think it's a good venue to have this where there are small, impressionable children involved. They want to have this venue open from 9 a.m. to 4 a.m. There are families living there with small children, school age and high school age. People work different shifts, and they would like to get their peace, quiet, and enjoyment out of the premises. And it's not a good place to have this. We have also Terminal 5 across the street, which we still have problems from time to time. And I would like the board to take some serious consideration on this issue and not give it a pass, because this is almost the same situation like Boxers at PS 21, where they wanted to put their venue on the premises, the same situation we're having here now. Putting a bar and a restaurant on the premises where there are small children and trusting parents bringing their children, thinking that they're in a safe place where they can get a decent pre-education to get them ready for regular school. Thank you. And I'd appreciate your consideration, and so will all the tenants in the room.
Thank you. Okay. Was there anyone else that did not get a chance to sign up? Okay, in that case, the public session is closed.
Thank you. And we are very privileged to have our assembly member, Gottfried, in the room. And hopefully he's going to tell us a few words. Hello, Dick. How are you?
Thank you.
I know, it's very confusing.
Maybe I just wrote it. one thing I'd like to talk about a little tonight is the situation in Puerto Rico. There's been a lot in the press about whether the United States should try to help out Puerto Rico with its debts and similar financial issues. One issue that has not gotten almost any coverage to speak of is the situation with Puerto Rico's healthcare system. And back in October, starting on Columbus Day, I was part of a delegation mainly made up of people from the state health department that went down to Puerto Rico. Our health department has been in consultation with their Medicaid program for, I guess, a couple of months now. And this is a meeting to go down to learn more about the situation and continue the talks that we've been having in New York. I wonder, what would New York have to do with this? And the answer is that
it is working.
The way the federal government treats Puerto Rico in dealing with the Medicare program and the Medicaid program, to me, is just one pretty sour example of over a century of really crude colonialism state in the union has the federal government match what the state puts in for the Medicaid program. Some states it's up over 80%. New York gets the lowest matching rate, 50%. But what we get is wildly generous compared to Puerto Rico, where they have about $2.5 billion Medicaid program, and their federal matching money is capped legally by Washington at $400 million. So they not only get a dramatically smaller percentage than we do, but as costs go up, the percentage matching rate goes down. And even with the Medicare program, they get the Medicare pays a doctor or hospital in Puerto Rico is radically less than what Medicare would pay to a doctor or hospital in Mississippi or New York or anywhere else. And on top of that, their health insurance plans are required to pay the taxes that come to the Affordable Care Act, but Puerto Ricans are not eligible for any of the subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. And they think that's kind of unfair, as anyone would. What New York has been doing, working on with Puerto Rico, is we in New York have gotten very good at figuring out what changes in the Medicaid program we can convince Washington to make on our behalf. And in the Medicaid program, the federal government will essentially give you waivers from various rules and regulations under Medicaid if you can convince them that it will still deliver quality care but save the state and the federal government money. And if you convince them of that, they will let you keep some of the money that the federal government would have given you anyway. The Medicaid waiver that New York is now in the midst of implementing, we're going to be getting about $8 billion in cash from the federal government over 5 years. So we've gotten very good over the years at figuring out what the federal Medicaid people are willing to listen to and what they want to hear, and how you can demonstrate to them that you're working to try to make the program better and ultimately save money. Maybe the part of the message is that if a resident of Puerto Rico moves to the mainland, they're citizens and would be immediately eligible for Medicaid, the federal government would be spending a lot more on their health care if they go to, let's say, Orlando, Florida, than if they stay in Puerto Rico. I don't think we want to cite that formally with the federal government as a source of savings, but they do need to know that. Anyway, so we were there to help the government of Puerto Rico develop an application for Washington some relief under the Medicaid program. It's critically important because 68% of the population of Puerto Rico is either on Medicare or Medicaid, which is a much higher percentage than New York or any other state. They have been losing doctors, no surprise. Someone goes to medical school in Puerto Rico, most of them have to go to the mainland to get their postgraduate training, and an awful lot of them never come back. And so part of the effort to rescue Puerto Rico from a really downward spiral involves trying to rescue their healthcare system, and that's what we were there for. It was, you know, when I came back, everybody wanted to know, you know, how did you enjoy your trip to Puerto Rico? And the only good part was that I was never in the sun. And that's good for me because the sun just burns you, literally. The bad part was that it was one of the most annoying and depressing 3 days I've ever spent. retreats, Puerto Rico. Of course, we're an awful lot of New Yorkers have friends and family. And that's also part of why New Yorkers get involved in this. So I just wanted to talk a little about that. If you want me to take questions, I'd be happy to.
Anyone has questions for the assembly member? Yeah?
Yeah.
What is the District of Columbia? Do they get state treatment, or are they in a similar situation?
As far as I know, D.C. is treated as if it were a state under Medicaid. The people that get this really horrendous treatment are the U.S. territories, which are, I don't know if I can recite a whole list, but in addition to Puerto Rico, there's the U.S. Virgin Islands, Samoa, Guam, those are the ones that come to mind. Other than Puerto Rico, they are very tiny, have very small populations. Some of them have much more flourishing tourist economies and military facilities. But the Puerto Rico situation is really the biggest and most glaring.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. Always welcome.
Robert Atterbury, representing Congressman Jerry Nadler.
It's not ready. Can you believe it?
Hi everyone, Robert Atterbury with Congressman Jerry Nadler's office. I'm going to be pretty brief tonight. There are two items that I want to bring to your attention, or four reports to the back. The first is that the Congressman is continuing to press his colleagues for full permanent reauthorization of the DROGA 9/11 health bill. This bill provides healthcare compensation to first responders, victims, residents nearby that were affected by 9/11. The funding has expired, which means every day we move closer to the time where benefits run be cut and healthcare payments will come to an end. As we all know, the cancers and diseases caused by exposure to the toxic dust and other elements at the World Trade Center site will not have ended in the coming months. They will be continuing on for the rest of people's lifetime, and they deserve compensation and they deserve care. You can't interrupt cancer treatment simply because Congress can't get it back together to pass a bill permanently reauthorizing the funding. So we are continuing to press for it. The whole details are in the back. The other piece that I have for you today is that I just want to read a statement that the Congress member put out today. Today we came to a select committee, and it does not have a formal name. At the moment, we are calling it, and this is a select committee that has come out of the hearings on Planned Parenthood. At the moment, we're calling it the Republican Select Committee to Attack Women's Health. And I'm going to read the statement in full because it's actually quite brilliant. So Congressman Abbott said, "We all know that the Republican Select Committee is a sham, set up to attack women's health in a blatant attempt to eliminate the constitutionally protected right of women and families to access an abortion. This misguided way to tax their resources does the latest chapter of politicians coming to legislate against women's personal health choices, against medical facts, and against the U.S. Constitution. Republicans continue to lie about their reasoning to setting up the committee, and while we know that this select committee is totally illegitimate, those of us know the truth and know that Republicans will use any excuse to stop safe and legal abortion in this country must stand up against the lies being used to take away the right to guarantee by our Constitution. I am proud to stand up for these rights and proud to serve as my colleague and advocate for true and defender of the life-saving women's health services we've been known as in the country." So in the coming months, I'm sure you guys will hear more about this. It's something that we are joining to make sure that we are exposing the hypocrisy of the Republicans' efforts to limit the access to abortions and women's health services. With that, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representing State Senator Brad Ornman, Eli Sinstrode. He's not here.
He was.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll skip it. Representing Councilmember Corey Johnson.
I'm going to talk about just a few things. The first is that in the universe of two steps forward, one step back, we had a nice, at the time, meeting with community board leadership and the new SLA chair a few weeks ago. It was a good meeting in the meeting. We talked about the stipulation system. So the new chair of the SLA, Mr. Bradley, he had committed to both Brad and Daniel Squadron and his confirmation hearings that he would have an individual meeting with community board leadership. And George was like asking him to come over and do that. And Senator Squadron had meetings with the community boards 1, 2, and 3. So Brad, along with Senator Kruger and also Senator Gaffney's office, Senator Johnson's office, and other folks, had community boards 4 through 7 with their leadership. He was there next day. It was good. We talked about the stipulation system. He agreed to maintaining and enforcing the stipulation system. There was a general, I'm going to call it theoretical, agreement that having stipulations be transparently available on a publicly accessible website is the goal moving forward. And the next step is how to go about that, because their system is as bad and as old as all the agency systems. There's an overview on that. Since then, we've had a few steps backwards where it feels like things that were committed to in the meeting we did not get appropriate follow through on. So we're at a good beginning of a conversation. On the environmental front, I want to talk about two things. Brad, along with Senator Rosenthal, submitted testimony about the Port Ambrose proposal. If you're not familiar with it, there's supposed to be a site, or possibly going to be a site 19 miles off the coast of New York. That'll be a port for liquefied natural gas. Liquefied natural gas having the dubious distinction of being much worse than pretty much all the fuel we're already using in terms of the heat it traps. So it's testimony against it, saying, good God, why are you going to do it? It's dangerous. Also submitted testimony to, there's a very interesting program in New York, it's kind of wonky that not a lot of folks know about, but I urge you to review about it. It's called the Reforming Energy Vision Plan, REV. And it's about moving New York towards sustainable resources. Senator submitted testimony about basically pleading with the state not to continue pillaging the budget for the program that maintains a multi-state cap and trade for carbon emissions. It's routinely rated, saying like, these don't make it, it's really important to keep rating it, actually you don't want to be able to participate. It's really, it's kind of like a first of its kind of nation program because it works so well with so many states. We've been getting very involved in NYCHA's Next Generation Plan, NYCHA. This past weekend, Brad, along with our President Brewer, was at the West Side Tennis Conference, and on a panel just about NYCHA Next Gen. Everyone was particularly concerned, Brad was very concerned about the trend towards privatization that we're seeing in our public housing and in the models for public housing, and in the total lack of guarantee for public accountability and public process about how that's all being developed. And how is it going to require NYCHA developments to go through a LERC process? Surely we all know that bill will not pass until the Senate has a different composition, but we feel extremely strongly about it, and in fact, we're going to do what we can to make sure there's community voice on NYCHA developments moving forward, especially. A lot of community put around the proposals to have mixed income private developments built on NYCHA land. Currently, as the plan stands, there is zero guarantee offered for who will get into those affordable or affordable units, there won't be any community preference. If the proceeds from it will go back into the development on whose land the infill developments sit, all kinds of things are there. We feel reasonably certain that either Chelsea or the Lower East Side, which is also in Center Harlem District, are prime territory for those mixed income infill developments, because what we're looking for is high property value under reuse and naturally. The National Conference of Chelsea and Lower East Side, that Governor Cuomo signed, issued an executive order enacting basically the anti-discrimination provisions of Senator Gottfried's gender expression on discrimination, which is terrific. They tried for years and years and years. The Assembly member did his job, and the Assembly passes that bill every year, year after year after year, and it can't even get to the floor in the Senate. So it's terrific that the governor enacted it by executive order. It's just not the end of that story. The next thing that needs to happen is that we still need to pass the bill so that some other random governor who comes in and decides he doesn't feel like that should be the case can't just undo it, which is completely possible. And I think that's what I wanted to say to you all.
Thank you.
There are questions you have to answer them, but that's it. I ask the questions and no one ever asks what was the question.
Is that going to come to the floor next year?
Scary dream. We'll ask if Kendall will come to the floor. I would speculate as to what goes on in the Republican leadership's mindset and in their strategizing, but it would be shocking if they did such a thing during an election year since they haven't done it in not election years.
There's another question there.
In relationship to natural gas, there's been a lot of natural gas explosions through the pipes. And I don't know if you recently saw the explosion that happened under the main river in Moscow. So natural gas is something we definitely should be moving against. I mean, that whole river is on fire in the center of Moscow.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think it is safe to say that Senator Obama and Assembly Member Rosenthal, who's really been a terrific leader on this issue, are doing everything they can to weigh in every place possible against making the combined natural gas a part of New York's energy plan. It's absurd that we're talking about it. It's dangerous. It's worse than what already exists. Are you all ready for questions?
Well, it's because there was no loss for him.
Right. All your friends who live in suburban New Jersey should be calling their governor as well. And it's absolutely correct that there's been success with public pressure in putting a stop on really dangerous energy plans in New York. And we should all be equal for the report in this case.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Matt Green, representing Councilmember Corey Johnson.
Hello, Matt.
Thanks, Christine. Hi, everyone. Good evening. My name is Matt Green. I'm with City Councilmember Corey Johnson's office. So first, if you haven't picked up a monthly board report, please do so. There's copies in the back. It covers our legislative and community updates in full detail. But I wanted to highlight a couple of things for you all from our board report. The first is on November 18th, we're going to be doing a town hall event. So please come out. We're going to have about a dozen city agencies represented at the town hall. But beginning at 5:30, we're going to have a community resource fair. This is all taking place at the LGBT Community Center. And the community resource fair will be an opportunity for residents to connect with community-based organizations to get information on various services and resources throughout the community. So we really hope you can attend. Again, it's Wednesday, November 18th at the LGBT Community Center, beginning at 5:30. I also wanted to bring everyone's attention, if you didn't hear, on October 20th, there was a fire on West 17th Street, and our office has been working very closely with the community board for the Office of Management, Emergency Management, Department of Buildings, Department of Transportation, on helping the residents in that area understand exactly what's going on with the fire and some street closures. So if you were impacted by this fire in any way, we are having an informational meeting tomorrow. So if you would like to attend to get updates on what's happening on 17th Street, just talk to me. I'll be happy to share the meeting details with you. And then last, while it's not Community Board 4, I wanted to let everyone know that earlier this week, the council member, along with Congress member Nadler, State Senator Brad Hoyle, Minnesota member Deborah Glick, and the Borough President Dale Brewer, we all signed up to a letter to oppose the plans for the redevelopment of the Gettysburg Historic District. And I don't know if people have been following this, but this is a historic district, and the plans are really out of character for the area and don't match the low-rise character of the Gettysburg Historic District. So I just wanted to let folks know that we're staying on top of this, and hopefully LBC will reject the plans as they currently are. So that's it for my updates. I'm happy to take any questions. Again, my name is Matt Green. Don't forget to get a board report. And it's great to see everyone.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, and we're presenting Scott Stringer, RJ Jordan. Is RJ there? No, he is not. And representing the public advocate is Sir James Ed Sullivan.
Hello, Ed. How are you?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Ed Sullivan. I represent the Sir James, who is a public advocate for New York City. He takes as her guide three ideas: litigation, legislation, and action. And I'll give you one of each of those tonight, as what you've done recently. On the foster children problem that she brought to the attention of the courts through a lawsuit, she has finally arrived at a victory. The Office of Children's Services will make sure that a monitor supervises the actions of the foster care program and reports to the public advocate and to others who are interested as to what's going on. Some terrible things are happening with children being troubled from family to family to family without my supervision. Hopefully that will come to an end. Working together with other members of the body politic, he has worked together with the state controller, Tom Napoli, to get some funds that were due to New York City, but nobody ever claimed them since 1985. That's 30 years was one claim funds. And she was able to get those funds taken out of the state coffers and returned to the city where they belong, to various agencies in the city. So that was a victory of action. In terms of legislation, he's trying to get laws passed to aid the mayor's very laudable Vision Zero plan to have traffic be safer than it is and a little swifter than it is, getting people from place to place so they're swifter. But I mean, it's enormously complicated. Enormously complicated. As I look around at all the city agencies, as I do now, as an aide to the public advocate, I would say that the traffic problems are probably the most unsolvable problems in the city today. That's a big statement, I know, but I don't know where some of these things are going. But she's taking her step. The long journey takes a single step to begin. And so she's taking a step with making, for example, left-hand turns. Signals be more obvious than such things. So, in another case, I will be back here 2 months from today, and I will answer any questions if you want me to. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time on that.
Okay, so we are expecting possibly board president Gelbour later on, so we will interrupt our business session when she comes around. And now we're going to move into the district manager report.
Hi everybody, so I'll try to be as brief as possible. Some of the highlights from last month. I met with the local sanitation superintendent for District 4, and we sort of have come up with a very productive way of keeping on top of illegal dumping locations, sidewalk obstructions, and overflowing the corner baskets. So obviously if you, and that's all that is actually reported on the monthly service town meeting, which is posted on the web. And I also send them out to all the board members, but if the public they are on the web, you guys can track that. But obviously if there's any complaints of that nature, please feel free to first call 311 and then follow up with the office. I also met with the Manhattan Borough President's Office and better ways to improve their data intern program. And then the office met with the Citywide Events Coordination Management Office to roll out the new way street activity permits are accepted and processed and reviewed. For business, just so everybody knows, there's a different date and location for this month's Waterfront Parks and Environment Committee. It'll be tomorrow, around Thursday, November 5th, and it'll be at the Fulton Houses at 119 9th Avenue. There's a different date for the Clinton Hell's Kitchen Land Use Committee. That will be on Thursday, November 12th. It's usually on Wednesdays. This month it's on Thursday, just because of the holiday. It's at the same location, which is at 307 West 43rd Street. Ongoing projects, things we're monitoring, as Matt said, we're organizing a community information meeting regarding the fire on 17th Street and the impact it's going to have on both that block and the surrounding blocks due to the traffic and construction and things like that. Part of the quality of life stuff we're working on, obviously, as I mentioned earlier today, tonight, was homelessness. So in the back, we have handouts, which is our homeless assistant toolkit. We've also blasted that out on our email, which lists a number of steps one can take to better assist folks when they see folks that are homeless, and local resources as well. Just so you know, some of the areas that we're focusing on right now are 57th and 9th, 26th between 9th and 10th, 35th and 10th, and 23rd between 7th and 8th. Those are all what we call hotspots on our list that we communicate those to the agencies, both the Department of Homeless Services, Homeless Outreach, and NYPD. What else? And then one other thing, the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene has released their district community health profiles. Those are specific to each community district. I would highly recommend taking a look at it. There should be a few in the back. I brought a few. But you can go online to the Department of Health website and take a look at what your community is. And they break it. They sort of mark us down with all the other 59 community boards in the city, so you can get to see some of the outlying issues of health issues that we're dealing with and where we're doing well and where we could be doing better. And so I recommend that as well. And as always, I really want to take a moment to just say I really appreciate the staff of Human Board 4, Nellie Gonzalez and Patty Norris.
Amber Nicosia, who's the chair of the nominating committee, is going to give us a report.
I'll see if everybody can hear me. Or do I need the microphone?
We're recording.
Amber Nicosia, chair of the 2015 nominating committee. To begin, I'd like to ask board members if there's any nominations from the floor, anybody who's interested in running that we have not heard from already. Okay, then we have a slate of the following. For chair, Dolores Rubin. For first vice chair, we have two candidates running. For Lazarin, Ernest Monterelli. Second vice chair, Lowell Kern. And for the two secretary positions, Michael Noble and Lily Fan. The nominating committee conducted interviews with all of the candidates over the past month. We feel confident that we've met six dedicated and qualified individuals for these positions. Next month, at the December full board, we will hold the election. The staff will distribute paper ballots. There'll be a vote. They'll be collected and tallied at the meeting. I wanted to add one additional thing. The CD4 bylaws state that if multiple people are running for the same position, each nominee can speak for 3 minutes before we vote. It is not required, but I encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity so that board members can understand why you're running for these positions. It is a good opportunity for us to learn more about the candidates. If you have any questions, you can reach me here at the board or reach me via email or on my cell phone. Thank you.
I made the slate.
I want to thank the nominating committee. This is a lot of responsibilities and a lot of work, so thank you so much for the good work. And who else was on the nominating committee? Can you tell me raise your hand who was on the nominating committee? That's it? Oh, good.
Jay and Jay.
Thank you so much. That is very helpful. Report of the chair. A few items of interest. The governor announced the winner of the Bayview RFP to transform the women's jail in a women's building on 20th Street and 11th Avenue. This enlarged building will offer affordable offices to nonprofit organizations whose mission revolves around women issues. And it will also provide facilities for startup companies and will be administered by the company we work. We're delighted that such a facility will be open to nonprofit organization with a good cause, and the project is funded by a grant of the Buffett Family Foundation. We do not have any details about the preservation aspect of the RFP and what will be ultimately done with it, so we will try to engage as soon as possible with the elected and the winning group to discuss those items and make sure that as much as possible is preserved in the building, as well as that there is enough of community space, which was one of our requirements. Small meetings continue unabated. First, we had a meeting with Council Member Corey Johnson with the Sanitation Department to propose a new policy to enforce sidewalk obstruction. We were not impressed. We've been working on this issue for 2 years. The chair of the Land Use Committee met with the Board President and then with DCP staff to discuss how to address insufficiencies in the new special permit guidelines for parking. It was encouraging, and they are now looking at this proposal. I attended the DOT kickoff of a project to install a bus rapid transit on 23rd Street, M23rd, and river to river. There will be an extensive outreach process and many opportunities to comment. And we are trying to form a tri-board working group with Board 5 and Board 6 to organize our positions. The BLP and QOL chairs and the staff met twice with the newly appointed chair Bradley and the State Liquor Authority, who indicated he will continue to be very attentive to the community. Concern and will hold the establishment accountable for their commitment. So we are hopeful, but let's say carefully hopeful. There was a status meeting organized by Corey Johnson with the Parks Department on the progress on the 20th Street Park. It's going in the right direction. I attended the Port Authority Board meeting, who voted to proceed with the next phase of the bus terminal replacement project. There will be an international competition for its design and a study of projected commuter volumes and travel patterns. The resolution is also asking for an in-depth consultation with the community, which is a first,
And this is, I think, a great victory after months of effort to educate the Port Authority leadership. And we attended a multi-board, we being George Stuchu and myself, attended a multi-board, and Inger was also in this meeting. And a multi-board presentation and discussion of the affordable housing zoning proposal organized by the board president, which was extremely useful, hearing what the other community board has to say about it, and how they look at it and what detail they look at. It's really interesting. And Joe distributed a draft of our resolution to foster support from other board, and we picked up a few gems from other boards who are going to hear about that. And I think that JT testified at the Landmarks Committee, commission, or you are testifying tomorrow on the Landmark Commission. You're not? You're not aware of that? Okay. he is just kidding. So the real question is when it will ever slow down. This is just keep going and very busy, but we had a great success and great months. So we are now ready to enter into the business session of the community boards for the public who doesn't know. At this point, the community members are discussing and voting the various resolutions, but the public doesn't have a say, and you can just listen, but you don't have a say at this point. All right, so we'll start with the business license letter. What would you like to bundle?
I suggest we can bundle items 2 through 11, or in other words, all of the BLP items except number 1.
Okay.
Dolores?
Anyone has a question? Yes, Dolores?
On item 5, Mercedes House, the only question I had is the outreach that they've done is 300 West 55th Street and the 55th Street Block Association. Those are on 8th Avenue. I don't know if anyone has suggested to them or if it's added at least to the letter that they should reach out to Harborview across the street.
We wouldn't ordinarily put it in the letter. That's right. We could ask them to do it. It's a pretty non-controversial setup. I mean, it's a beer and wine license in the cafe, which is buried
inside.
But if you like, I'm sure we can ask them to reach out before we send the letter.
Okay. Ken? No, we skipped the minutes. That's a good point. Why? By mistake. I skipped. You want to?
Minor correction?
Yes.
Minor correction before we describe the public session.
Favor? Okay, this is totally disorganized. Okay.
any more questions about items 2 through 11?
Oh, yes, Martin.
Would you talk a little bit about item 7? Is there a sound issue there? Did the materials that was promised arrive?
The materials that were promised did arrive. This is a place that's operated as a far noisier club than is contemplated now without complaint. So I think we were comfortable with what they told us. There was no community opposition or community speaking on the application at all.
Okay. All right. So all in favor of the items 2 to 11? Opposed? Present, not eligible? So it passes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to suggest we discuss item 1 with item 29, which is a letter from Housing Health and Services that relates to the same issue. This is phase 2 of a matter that the board considered last summer. It's an application to open an eating and drinking establishment on the ground floor of a Mitchell Lama housing development on 11th Avenue between 54th and 55th. The application last year was going to have inside space and a huge amount of outdoor tables, almost 300 seats, taking up the entire plaza in front. The HHH committee, particularly Barbara, Joe, and Sarah, did a lot of research to this at the time and determined that there were serious zoning issues relating to both the use of the outdoor space and the use of an indoor space for the type of establishment that's contemplated. HHH sent a letter at that time to DHP, the Department of Housing Preservation and Development, which would have to approve any lease. We sent a letter to the SLA asking them to wait until the zoning issues were resolved. The application from last year then got withdrawn, so nothing more happened at that time. It came back to the BLP last month, seeking only to use the indoor space. They abandoned the request to use the outdoor space, only wanted to open an indoor space restaurant. At the BLP meeting, we probably had 30 to 40 residents of the housing development that spoke against it. No one besides the applicant spoke in favor. So the BLP letter, which is letter 1, recommends again that the SLA wait until the zoning issues relating to the indoor space be resolved. And in any event, if they do not wait, we recommend denial of the application due to community opposition and various issues relating to the opposition. I'll let Joe speak to letter 29 now, which discusses the zoning issues.
So from August 29th letter, we actually were able to get the Department of City Planning to understand and rule that the outdoor space was entirely tenant open space and could not be used for commercial purposes. So that's one of the reasons they were changing the application. So that is now over and done. It's not going to be used for that later. The indoor space is a very peculiar thing. This is a large-scale residential plan from 1972, and it is specific that the commercial uses must be for convenient shopping for the residents. So we are questioning how a Mexican restaurant is a convenient shopping for residents. It was meant for these large salons around the city, the pharmacies, the grocery stores, the cleaners, things like that. So Sarah and I met with APD about 2 weeks ago on this, with the Assistant Commissioner Deputy Walter and Carolyn Walt with DCP, talked about this again. They're not doing that. Again, we knew that our request saying it's not a pharmacy, it's not that sort of thing. And hopefully they'll get back to us in the next week or so. We have them specifically. Secondly, that the lease must be a market rate lease for commercial space, because it's very important here that there is commercial income to subsidize the residential above. And there's a lot of concern that it's a below market arrangement, and that there's also a possible conflict of interest between a board member still possibly having some sort of involvement with the housing company at the lessor. So they get back to us hopefully and we'll get an answer to our question. We want to reiterate a lot of our concerns.
So anyone has a question about those two letters? Yes, JD?
My only request is an excellent letter to your bold line 21, and we say you need not.
Okay.
There's two friendly amendments to it. I wanted to just to follow up from the meeting with APD and GCP to reiterate our.
Yeah, you're talking about letter 29, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That they provide us a copy of the lease because we still have not yet seen the lease. And two, that I need to comparable rent for commercials in that neighborhood. That would be a problem that we
would. Okay.
And I should add, in response to community members' comments, we're going to add to item 1, page 2, line 29, something saying that the experts should also assess how noise travels through the building,
right,
given the building's unique construction. Right.
Okay. Yes, Brad.
In general, it's been empty 8 years, is that correct?
What?
It's been empty 8 years?
That's clear. We're looking into that. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, do we write a, I don't know if it's crossing the line, do we write a letter to our electors saying we reach out to grocers or the proper tenant that needs to come in here? I mean, clearly they need the money. If a Mexican restaurant might not be the ideal thing, but well, if we keep going around in a circle battling something else, maybe we should put our energy towards finding the right.
We actually in the letter asked HB to work with this housing company to find the appropriate tenant. And right now, the market on 11th Avenue in the last 3 years has changed so dramatically. The rent's over $55 to $60 a square foot. So there's no problem doing a rental here now. If there's a desire by this owner to rent to a certain type of tenant.
Okay, all in favor of the letters 1 and 29, right? Okay. All right, letter to HPD, pretty self-explanatory, is anyone has a question on letter number 12? This is your letter. How can you have a friendly amendment to your letter?
No, it's not.
I'm just kidding.
The letter, the tenant actually came to us looking for us to support that the definition of grandfathering, he said that grandfathering included the current tenant without any tenant, without any tenant. That was what they did request to us was that is, and that is what has been voted on and supported.
Okay. Is it the same building where they have an issue? Wait, where they have an issue of height?
It is the same building, and that we're trying to get also cleared up, and we're taking a position on it because there's conflicting surveys. So we need to get the right information to look at.
But that's going to be covered in that letter?
No.
Or not?
No.
Okay.
That will be a later letter.
It's another letter. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So with the friendly amendment that made this letter current, all in favor of letter number 12? Okay. Opposed? Present, not eligible? Okay. Item number 14.
Christine, we can bundle, I think, 14 through 20. The only comment on 20 is that this is regarding the Port Authority Master Plan, and it will likely go to other committees as well for input. Oh, Dolores has a question.
Well, this one is going to go out, and then they can. Okay.
The issue.
The issue. Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to pull out item 18 for discussion, please.
Okay. Okay. So item number 14 to 20.
Ken.
Ken. Okay. Yes.
Go ahead, Ken.
You want it now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Where it describes detectable warnings, the accurate statement is something like detectable warnings are required to delineate the border between a pedestrian area and a motor vehicle area wherever there is not a full height curve. Also indicate
that
required
24
inches.
Okay. Ken, could I ask you to send me that language?
Sure.
Yeah.
And what I'll say generally, vision and fair community is very, very appreciative of the community board continuing support pedestrian safety is really great. How much support is important. I think Michael mentioned in this letter the accessible pedestrian.
Thank you.
Okay, Ginger.
Can I just ask in the future if there's a list or an attachment that's sort of important that we can actually see it? Because it refers to the list and I have no idea.
We're talking about the ranch, right? Yeah, I think that's, we don't have the list. So when are we going to get a list?
We have
outdated list that needs to be updated, so it will have to be updated before we send that out. But the request is generally the same. The only thing regarding the list is if you have one that you think should be included, make sure you send that to me so that we can include it. Other than that, the request would change.
We'll get you the list.
Okay. So, item...
Christine.
Yes? Bert.
On 17, if I remember, we had before the board in the last year, 26 trees of that to be torn up from the pipe.
What is the question?
Oh, 26 Street is going to be one of the water main connections.
Torn up, so that would provide the perfect opportunity to redesign the street.
Okay, so we need to check on that and then add some language to discuss that.
That's true.
That's a very good point.
It's the actual,
right.
It's the actual street though, not the avenue?
The street.
No, it's the street.
It's the street.
Right.
26th Street.
Right. Okay, so we'll add some language to that effect. All right. So we have a letter 14, 15, 16, 17, 19, and 20. All in favor? Opposed? Present, non-eligible? And we'll make sure we include all these. So letter 18, Doris.
So first I had a question and then a comment. Was there a presentation made to transportation about this event?
There was not a presentation. This was brought to the committee from one of the board members.
Okay.
From one of the board members?
I personally am concerned if the board overall is taking a position on something which may take resources away from answering real problems about our traffic. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Yes, Jenny.
I'm troubled by this letter. It says that this has been a successful plan in New Delhi. I don't know if any board member went to New Delhi. It says it's been tried in Oslo. I don't know if this is true or not. It says that this should be tried out in the Central Business District, which I assume is not Ward 4. So I am troubled by these broad letters that we haven't properly researched or know about. They may be good, they may not. There may be a lot of questions raised. And I don't think the board should get into supporting these large policies that we have not looked into. And secondly, it says this works in Paris. I go in Paris. The metro system is terrific. We don't have a terrific subway system in the Bronx and Brooklyn and parts of Queens, but people do need vehicles to get to work. I'm troubled by taking a stand that may impact badly on people who need to get to work, people who need accessory ride, all these questions. So I cannot support this letter.
Yes, James.
I'm with JD. I would say that maybe it's the wording of the letter, because it really comes to a conclusion to advocate, and I'll just read the last sentence, the last part of the last sentence. We ask for your leadership and partnership in making a car-free day in New York a reality. I mean, that is like conclusory without really any analysis. So maybe if really what we're looking for is the answers to the questions that JD's talking about, that's a letter I can support. Because then it's talking about, this seems to have worked. You know, what is the feasibility of this working in New York? These are the benefits. You know, maybe that's something that even JD.
So perhaps if it's language, we can change it to exploring the idea of having a car-free day.
I support that as written.
Okay, Angel?
I can agree with both of them. Paris, Berlin, Madrid, it's a different, it's totally different. It's not New York. There's more squares, more green space, it's more walking and biking. It's not like New York.
Okay. Ken?
Yeah, in response to comments, I'd like to make a motion to refer back to the committee. I think we can take advantage of this. There's no urgency in this.
We have a motion. We have a second on that motion?
Second.
Yes. All in favor of that motion? Okay. Okay, item 21 is ratification. And 20. Right, 21 and 22. No, nothing. Okay, and then 23. And yeah, 21, 22, and 23. Any questions on those? Yes. So, all in favor of 21, 22, and 23? Opposed? Present, not eligible? Okay. Item 24, we had a hearing about that, so, and there was no question, there were no questions. All in favor of, Amber.
I know this year was a very different system, so things did not go, we were not able to complete things in this, as short a period of time as we have in the past. Do we know, or do we have any indication that next year will be a similar system? Has we had any feedback on this so far?
Yes.
It's here to stay.
Yes, it'll be. Most likely, it'll be the same. It'll be the same. When you say system, it's going to be the same platform.
Right.
In terms of scheduling, I'm not sure. So what they did this year, right, was they created a draft. Instead of what we normally have is a statement of district needs and then budget requests,
right.
They replaced that with a draft of both of those and then a final of both of those. So I think by next year, hopefully, what we'll all be doing, like, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, is all we're doing is creating one final at this time in November or in October.
So just to touch on one point, in the education working committee where we need approval from the principals, the schools are closed in July and August. So if there is a way for us, in terms of the working group, to be able to collect some information prior to...
Well, so you need to plan for that and collect during the school year.
Right.
Yep.
As long as that's...
Yes, that's what you have to do,
right.
So that when you get to the time of doing it, then you have the information.
I just want to make sure that that will be there.
So, Christine.
Yes.
Yes. So regardless of the deadlines, the idea is that these conversations should be part of every committee meeting, that if there are ideas or recurrent themes that need to be thought of for the budget process, that is basically by the time you get to bring everything together, it should be an accumulation of all of the things we've been working on throughout the year and that we are advocating for our
community. And typically you should have had letters going around about before that. It shouldn't be like
it's all new news.
It'll be dated prior to when we get them. So I just want to make sure.
No, but
you'll add those concerns at the time that the task force meets. But these are conversations that don't have to happen at a specific time.
Let's be clear. If you are in the task force, and you should bring those letters and those needs to the committee to pass the resolution during the years.
Right.
And then you summarize the resolution in the budget. That's what it is. Okay, so all in favor of this budget and priorities? Yes? Opposed? Present non-eligible? So we have that. Okay. Then letter 25, any questions about that? I know there is a slight change. Yes.
I just want to say letter, and I appreciate it, seeing that you wrote it. Just on line 15, I'm just as a young father, I would suggest changing from mothers to parents.
Ooh. Oh, yes. Oh.
Yes.
All right.
Oh.
9:15. I'm so. Are you going to report me as discrimination? Martin.
This is a question about what our board and boards in general can do. Explain to me line 22. Boards must be given the option to obtain stricter enforcement.
Well, apparently in the past they had not enforced the A-frame as, you know, strongly as some people wanted.
See, I get all that.
Then what happened is that in some boards, they were public listening, and then after that, people say, we want to be strict enforcement. Strict enforcement means you would enforce the law, which says you are not supposed to have any frames. And then we would have the option to talk to the Department of Sanitation and say, you know, in our district, this is the way we want the enforcement to be done.
I don't understand. Even with what we just said, I don't understand what process you're asking for. Can our board do stricter enforcement? That's not what we do.
No, that's not what we do. But if they were adopting that policy in the Department of Sanitation, they could elect to do it that way, because they did it that way in 2008.
I'll be very happy if you change the wording on line 22. It seems weird.
Okay. We'll try to clarify that. So essentially what we are asking is them to enforce the law as it is.
We're asking the Department of Sanitation to do what they have to do, but we can't do it.
Right.
And this line
makes it
muddy.
Okay, I get it. So all in favor of item number, where are we?
25.
25. Yes. Opposed? Present non-eligible? Okay. Okay. 26 and 27, I'm turning to Joe. Yes.
Okay.
JD? Lee? Okay. Anybody else?
Department of City Planning came to the Clinton Land today about some proposals for changing zoning for affordable housing, they call it. The other two committees in attendance were the Chelsea Planning Committee and the Housing Health and Services Committee. The three committees are working on a response to this. We have until November 30th for that response, but we need a vote tonight. Give us the go ahead, especially because Joe and Betty are not here, and so distasteful the merchant for China to get out of the country. And Lee and Sarah and Christine and a number of people are working to fill this out. So we need approval tonight for what we're working on. Joe has been doing a tremendous amount of work on this.
So I really want to thank all the chairs. We've all worked together on this because the witnesses, three committees. And three committees have three points of view, and then how to reconcile those together. And then we did a lot of research in city planning and subsequently to make sure that we were not missing items or misunderstanding items. This is one of the largest, these are two citywide zoning proposals, and they cover not just mandatory inclusionary housing, they also cover zoning and quality housing to allow more senior services, but also to change contextual zoning throughout the entire city. So there's lots of bits and pieces that are hidden in there. And one of the things we want from helpful direction from the city planning is it will help on our letter to put in more rationales. So you see in parts of the zoning and quality letter that we have those rationales that need to be deeped out. because Christine and I went to this meeting on Friday. Community boards have been active. Some are getting, some just saw this for the first time last week, and they're having to now opine on this. The borough board's going to respond. I mean, the borough president's going to respond. This is a zoning text amendment. It's not a full 60 days. It's collapsed to 30 days for the borough president at the same time. So this is a major issue. I think that you read the letters and you found some major issues in them. We're bringing them up. I want to note one item tonight that Christine and I found out about on Friday night to make a change in our position. There's one piece of text that I asked the CCP about a building less than 45 feet. If you have affordable housing, the rules don't apply. It turns, and I was told it's just an administrative thing, not a big deal. It turns out that's the sliver buildings law that was passed in the 1980s that fixed sliver buildings, that do not permit these skinny buildings into the low rise blocks. This zoning says if you have affordable housing, that gets waived. So we have to change our position to add in that, of course, we support the idea of not having sliver buildings in context. But otherwise, I'll just take any questions because this is a request for change.
So they said there were three different options for affordable housing in the MIH letter. The first one was
Who's that? Letter number
26. Number 26. Around line 163, there are three different options that are set out to create affordable housing. One is 25% and then two are at 30%. The last one doesn't apply to Manhattan District 1 through 8. What I would suggest is in Manhattan District 1 through 8 that it not be less than 30%.
So the request is to increase the percentage ask, which is consistent with our long-term board position at 30% or less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our in our policy already.
Right, it is, yes. Right. It's in our plan.
Right.
There's also a labor law.
Yes, Martin.
I'm so impressed with the work that y'all have been doing on this.
Y'all are tired.
I just want to ask some clarifying questions, and I have four of them. You can ask a lot of questions on this, and as I was reading, I was saying to myself, no, you can't ask that. Just cut it down.
There's no stormwater here.
No. What can I say? I was confused by the third option. The third option says 120% of AMI. Is that a flat
average
of AMI, or is it an assortment going down to the top of 122 to some lower?
It's actually between maximum 130 going, and there is no, I asked this question specifically, there is no lowest AMI in that. It's no more than an average of 120 over a range, over a series of range.
But if the average is 120, why wouldn't the developer, the higher the AMI for the developer, the more money they're making, right?
No. Certain lower income units bring loan housing tax credits, which bring investment to the project. That's the opposite effect.
But at least it's not just straight 120, is it? It's right. Sort of, but thank you. The second is around line 121. Hardship example. When does a developer have a hardship?
This is a legal requirement. In any kind of zoning, there must be an out that in the event, for whatever reason, there's a rock outcropping on a site in the Bronx. There's an underground stream in Queens. And in Manhattan, but specifically, giving you a for example, this is a something next to a highway and a tidal estuary. You have to always in zoning be able. Otherwise, you can declare it.
So that's business as usual.
Yeah. Mm. So
don't waste your time.
So the work center will be able to say, for some reason that is peculiar to this particular site, we cannot make this work. If this preserves the legality of this, remember this is mandatory. It's not a voluntary. When it's mandatory, you must do it. So if it's imposed, you must have a way out legally if there's an issue.
No, wait a minute. This is you're not next. You're next, but not yet.
With line 105, right, and around there, a separate building on the same zoning lot. That,
that felt to me like a four-door.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is actually addressing the four-door issue, right? So, specifically, in the proposal from the mayor's office, if in fact there's, let's say you have very large lots, right? There could be a full block site, like a full block. That the way they address it here is to say that you cannot locate the entrance to that separate affordable housing building facing someplace else. It must be on the same street as the main building. So the example we have in our neighborhood is Silver Tower, where the entrance to the market rate would be 20th on 42nd, and to the affordable on 41st, facing the back end of the bus garage, the empty bus garage. You would no longer be able to do that. That being today, and they wanted to build a separate building on the same site, you would have 2 inches on West 42nd Street.
So what you're saying, Joe, is that it's going to make it so complicated to achieve that it's going to dissuade developer from making a separate building.
Especially when you have smaller sites, because you're not going to be able to figure
right.
that out. If you have a site, that was a heck of a block. If you have a site that is only 100 feet, 150 feet wide,
you can't do it.
You're not going to do it.
Right.
So I'm trying to catch this on the run, and what I'm hearing is that this language does make it difficult.
Right.
It doesn't make it impossible, but
makes it much more difficult than it is today.
So the fourth thing, and it's really a request, and I give you an example on line 127 and 129. I don't know what the home ownership option, I'm not asking you to tell me now. I don't know what the home ownership option and the no preservation option is, and I'm hoping that when you reconstruct this letter, when you have jargon that you explain.
I can tell you quickly, home ownership in inclusionary is allowed to do home ownership units. If you do a condominium, and we have one in our board happening on site, the 505 is 43rd, there will be affordable condominiums inside a market rate building. So that's the home ownership option. The preservation option is specifically in the voluntary program, where instead of building new housing, you can preserve, let's say, a Section 8 building where the subsidies were expiring, to invest in it and extend the, and make permanently for those. In the mandatory program, they decided, the mayor decided they would not do preservation at all. It was only to create new construction to increase the supply of affordable housing.
Okay. Jay.
Actually, just a question, Margaret, for me. Just wondering, particularly with 27, where a lot of the things that we're making recommendations or expressing concerns are the areas that are blank. So is line 20, is it possible, I know that the time constraint,
which line?
We actually, most of our recommendations in letter 27 are things that
are blank.
No, the recommendation is in there. The documentation of the recommendation is not in there. But the recommendation is in there.
Well, the documentation, right?
Yeah, the documentation. Right.
Right.
So
that's not what I'm sending out to the whole board. So the whole board could just.
Yeah, when we have another round, right.
Well,
we send it around.
We actually print the process. We establish a list of bullet points of items that are missing. Everyone's been given assignments.
Well, we'll send it around when we have a new version.
Okay, version.
That's the end. Right.
And the other thing is just to convince you, though, under concern, though, that anything that goes to BSA, our board can review. And we usually require that.
Required.
So that we will be reviewing any of those exceptions that you see will concern
about. Okay.
Hazards. Yeah, that people can get out of this.
Engine.
Just want to say that the guys here that are working on this, I was at the meeting Friday, our board knows what you're talking about. There's only one other board that I'm impressed with. You guys
That's
knew what you were asking, you knew all the right questions, and I think that Gilmore has a session on the 16th so that we can go here.
Yes, we will. So, all in favor of those? Oh, one more thing?
Oh, he
has one more thing. He said four, but now it's five.
So generous to me, I really appreciate it. New housing experts are so good about permanent and permanently affordable.
Yeah.
And affordable for whom? That is, you're conscious of the income bands And it seemed to me in the second letter on lines around 195, that issue of affordable for whom and permanently affordable. I mean, I understand this is an outline, but I just want to underline, at least in my humble opinion, the importance of that issue. It should be all over the
place. One thing we discovered with the affordable senior housing is 9 years, that it's not, you get a bulk increase, you get a bonus, but there's no permanence required. We didn't see that at first. So how does this work? Anywhere in the city, you get an increase in bulk for senior housing, but it's only going to be for 30 years.
No one's perfect.
And we said if the bulk stays, then there's an permanence.
That was a great line.
Okay, so. All in favor of item 26? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. There is another question.
No.
See, I knew. Okay. So 26 and 27. Please, all in favor. Oppose. Present, not eligible. Okay, and then we're going to do number 29 is done. 30 is just a repeat of, a letter we have done before, so it shouldn't be controversial. So all in favor of item 30. Opposed, present non-eligible, good. And now, as a reward for all this work, we have our board president, Gail Moore, with us.
It's our treat.
Thank you very much.
It's
there is not a reward, but I'm honored to be here. I'm not surprised about board four. If you didn't have a death question, people would be upset. People are scared of you. They talk about you everywhere. Do you have to go to board four instead? as was indicated, yes, we are every board president is at the hearing on the DCOA, and ours is Monday, November 15th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Clinton School in your neighborhood, 10 East 15th Street. And I hope you will all join us. Thank you for the city looking for input. I just came from Board 7. They're having a similar discussion. And it's really important to have these discussions. I will just say one more thing about senior housing that I don't know the answer to, but I'm not sure I like this, which is the idea of what service should be permanent, but what kind of senior housing. And there's a big discussion about being dependent, and then assisted living, and then more challenging situations if you have them as a senior all in one building. Most of the elected officials don't like that, so I think the time goes on to put those apart. Because you have a lot of providers in Board 4 that have a lot of expertise. The second thing I want to mention, something that you're probably familiar with, which is the whole issue of pay phones. They are soon going to appear. I think that this board has been more active. We cannot get any other board to pay attention to this issue. And they're going to pop up along with different types of advertising, I'm sure. And of course, it will somewhat be some free data bite and some calls. But then people are going to call us. And I'm going to just refer them to Christine. Say, and where in the world were you? Because I really appreciate everything that you've done. Unfortunately, a lot, and in World War II, construction workers are dying. They're dying more than they have in the past. And so we have been working with the industry and the unions. You're more than welcome to join us, but on November 10th, very soon, we're going to have a really wonderful working group to talk about what we can do to make construction sites safer. Goodness knows in this area, that is a big issue. And so we're going to do that. We're very focused on mental health, and so we're doing some roundtables. If there are individuals who want to work with us, on November 18th, we're going to be bringing some providers together. The credit of the mayor's office, there's a blueprint ideas and some funding, but I guess I'm very focused on schools. I also community work process is going to start in a couple of weeks, just in terms of the applications being online, and then we'll be due until January 29th, 2016. But obviously, we'll be We're very interested in the issue of all the training that we've been doing, and I want to thank you because a lot of the board members have participated. We have some more coming up at the Uptown office, and I think they have been helpful to people. We're always trying to give out money to nonprofits. It's incredibly important to me that these nonprofits survive and do well. So, as you know, we had some police community forums, and so the youth groups that are working on police community issues are going to be getting funding as a priority. Number two, we had a big urban farming conference. We had hundreds of people to show up. Some of your schools are doing a fabulous job on this issue, roof gardens and hydroponics. Cornell University can do a whole classroom of STEM without a lot of funding. And so we're beginning to try to get more schools to have hydroponics in their classrooms. We'll be doing funding for that. And then finally, we're very supportive of the gardens, the community gardens that are doing composting. And so we will be working with the Solid Waste Advisory Board to give out more funding as we have in the past for those issues. Finally, the November 5th is tomorrow, and the Harlem LGBTQ community with Community Board 10 is the first time ever is having a conference sponsored by the Task Force on Board 10 that focuses on LGBT issues. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people attending from 6 to 9 at the Harlem State Office Building. So those are most of the issues. We pushed really hard with the boards not to have the Landmarks Preservation Commission just eliminate the 90 back wrong items. They want to say, oh, sorry, there are a whole bunch of items on the backlog of landmarks. We'll just get rid of them. We're not going to consider them. They're too old. We said, no. You cannot do that until we have a hearing. Maybe they should be on, maybe they should be off, but you have to have a hearing. So, you know, there's one tomorrow on November 12th. And we hope that you have already weighed in. I'm sure you have. Thank you very much, and I'm here with Drew Lombardi and what Ed Moore for. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and unless we have other businesses, the session is adjourned. Thank you so much.
Ending on a high note.
8:20.
Welcome.
This is a notification that mothers are in there twice.
So, yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned one of the
Yes, you're right.